It's so hard for me to sit back here in this studio looking at a guy out here hollering my name when last year I spent more money on spilled liquor in bars from one side of this world to the other than you made. You're talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kiss stealing, woo, wheeling dealing, limousine riding, jet flying, son of a gun, and I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down. Woo!
To all hustlers with the same interests, bow your heads as the Lord's mentioned. Prayer service held in the kitchen.
It is John Pollock and Court Bauer, and the two of us, wandering in the darkness, have found one another. How are you, Court?
Well, since we dealt with all the technical issues before the show,
holy Christ,
much better.
We almost gave it no shot here. Between your battling with Ghostbusters toys and my firewall issues, this has been a wonderful last 20 minutes of our lives.
Listen, I have a prop from the damn movie. You're dealing with whatever the hell you're dealing with out there in Toronto, and I see this light glowing in my home office for this prop, and I cannot figure out what the hell it was doing.
It's not a carbon monoxide warning, is it?
No.
Okay.
My ghost trap had a red light on. I didn't know what to do. It's a movie prop, so it doesn't work like logical things. So you were tinkering firewalls. I was dealing with some ghost issues, but that's the way it goes when you have a Bauer and Pollock one-shot. This is the prep we do for the show.
Well, Court, I have had one question on my mind for the last 5 weeks for you, and only you can answer this.
Dear God.
Where is Richard Simmons?
He's in his house. He's in his house, and like everyone in show business, I think at one point he just said, fuck it, and decided he was done with it. That's my theory. I think that he just said it was just too exhausting for him, and you get to a certain age, you just don't have that energy. But that's a great freaking that's seriously one of my favorite podcasts of all time. Just awesome.
I'm obsessed with it. I love it, but I do agree that it's next week is I believe episode 6.
Right.
It is time to wrap it because he feels as though, all right, I'm getting nowhere here, and I don't know how much more he can just keep digging here.
Well, and he always said that it was just going to be a 6-episode deal, which is what Bauer and Pollock should have been. No. But
wow. Maybe I'm going to go missing now.
Oh,
I'm going to ghost you.
Oh, my God. Well, if you show up in Orlando with the short shorts and the Richard Simmons bedazzled top, that'll get a Road Warrior pop for your live podcast.
Maybe Richard Simmons will be in Florida.
Maybe he's the guy in the New Day ice cream cart. He just pops
could you
out.
Imagine?
Holy shit, what a payoff.
He'd be a way more relevant celebrity this year than I feel Shaq would have been on this card.
Or frankly, Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, yeah. Go Richard Simmons. I mean, the big reveal, you have Dan Taberski come out with the New Day. And then, boom, out of the New Day pops, you'd get quite the pop for Richard Simmons coming out.
A Richard Simmons pop.
Oh, we get an impromptu Slimmons session.
Oh, my God. We're
with
losing 55,000
people in Orlando. This could be wonderful.
All right. The one shot's already off to a bad start here. We have people across the board tuning off right now.
Nah, I'm going to take all of their attention for granted, and we will just go whichever direction we want. We have lots to cover.
We do.
Lots to discuss this time of the year as we're getting closer to WrestleMania, and we basically know the entire card at this point, Court. We've got essentially 13 matches that have either been announced or are just about to be announced.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a very lengthy card, much like last year's was. It's going to be an issue this year when it comes to volume, because last year, certainly, that wall was hit before the main event.
Yeah, and I don't envy the agent or the writer timing out this show, because there's going to be matches that inevitably are going to be more about the entrance than the actual match. It's almost like they have a lot of time to play with. They really do, but there reaches a point where you know they're just going to have to shave off time from some big matches. Now, you know the main event, the probable main event with Goldberg and Brock Lesnar for the Universal title probably isn't going to go 15 minutes, probably not going to go 20 minutes. It's going to be a very short, violent, and abrupt match would be my prediction. So,
do you like that going last?
I think so at this point. It feels like the biggest match they have in terms of star power. They need the unified title to have some credibility. It has suffered since day one, you know, after they crowned Finn Balor the champion and everything that happened since. I think right now they need to position that belt as a coveted belt. I hate having two world titles or universal/world titles. It's not my cup of tea, but I think that's where they're going to go. It's been brewing for a long time, and hopefully they can have a good match in the short little window they have for this match. It should be a short match. If it goes long, Bill's going to possibly blow up. The match is going to suffer, I think. I mean, the other day when he was out there before they did the F5, I mean, he was turning purple. He was just sweating and huffing and puffing. It was kind of concerning to see him in that situation. So I don't think you want to go long with him. But I don't think he should. In these kind of matches, to have these, they've kind of conditioned the crowd to expect anything can happen with a Goldberg match, but you're going to probably see it over very quickly, like a Mike Tyson fight, so you better just sit down and watch it while it lasts.
Well, I can see pros and cons. I feel the pros of putting on Goldberg and Lesnar last, especially after such a long show. I mean, that to me was, you got the combination last year of that super long segment with The Rock and Cena and the Wyatts, and then you followed that at the end of the night where you went past 11 p.m. with a 27-minute match with Hunter and Roman Reigns, and that crowd and most people at home were just exhausted at that point. You put on Goldberg and Lesnar, you've certainly conditioned the crowd that match can end at any time. You're not right in the mindset of we're sitting back for 20, 25 minutes before we know that we can bite on a near fall. However, this past week, me and Wei were chatting about this week, the fact that Roman Reigns just threw in that line that he's going to be the guy to retire The Undertaker. If you come back this Monday and Taker cuts that promo that if I can't beat you at WrestleMania, then it really isn't my yard, and you throw that in there, that to me is the main event of WrestleMania. That instantly becomes the most intriguing stipulation of any match, whether Taker wins or loses, just dangling that out there.
Yeah, but it just feels like the wrong timing. It feels like you're jumping way ahead of where that should be going. You know, the Undertaker and that whole established story, it isn't really established. You know, you don't feel like it has that steam. So it's almost like you're throwing on that gimmick to give it that sizzle. And I would be very careful with that. Now, Undertaker, I don't know if he feels like this is it and there's, you know, this is the end of the road. If so, WWE should have done a better job with setting the table. But otherwise, I think you hold off. It's a good idea. I don't feel like they've set the table for that concept.
Do you think that was a throwaway line by Reigns? Do you think that they don't play up on it?
We'll see.
We'll find out. So that is what's got kind of, you know, we looked at this card, and this was a card that when it started to get out, I think that there was a lot of people scratching their heads about some of these pairings and ideas. As it's come together, though, Court, have you, first of all, what did you think of this card before the buildup on television began, and has your opinion changed at all now that you've seen the key angle shot?
I think they've done a really good job, and they had to, for the Shane McMahon AJ thing. I mean, that brawl I thought was pretty good for what it was. I know people are still opposed to that match, but for what they did, they did a pretty damn good job. Same with Cena and Nikki versus Miz and Maryse. I think they've done a great job building that.
Those promos have been great for that program, and you got a big angle with Hunter and Rollins on Monday. Like I feel that the key programs they've done a pretty good job with.
Yeah, I think they've undercut the women's title by on SmackDown side by having the multi-person match. I think it would have been a really cool story if you had the right dynamic at play with Mickie James going for it against whoever the champion was. Mickie James as a babyface, maybe against Alexa Bliss, but that's not how they want to configure, because it's kind of like they want to get everyone on the show, so that's what you do in that thing. I also would have liked another version of the women's title, the Raw version, to have a more a cleaner version. I don't like the triple threat idea, and I wish they hadn't beat Charlotte last month. But you know, that to me is a program that was a little hobbled going into this.
Yeah, I haven't understood the booking of that Raw Women's title for the last month, giving the title to Bayley on television, the end of the streak to no nothing, like all that equity you put into that streak, and the fact that they beat Sasha in her hometown of Boston last year to preserve this streak, and that was the payoff, a nothing ending to it last month or earlier this month.
Any given TV, Vince can just totally do a 180 on something that he committed and doubled down on weeks ago, days ago. And so, unfortunately, it took an abrupt end when they did what they did last month.
How much convincing did you have to do in 2006 to make sure Mark Henry didn't end the streak in Chicago?
It was talked about briefly because Mark was on such a tear, and then the conversation quieted down a little bit, and the perspective being that...
Could you have imagined if it ended there?
You know, it's just like, when was the right time? And to me, the right time was probably Randy Orton at WrestleMania 21. That felt like the right time. And now it's just... now I watch Undertaker, and I don't marvel at what he does the same way. I'm more like... cautious concern kind of vibe when I see him out there, because he's a big dude. He's like a Don Jardine type guy, a big dude that's taken a lot of bumps and can go, and it was very agile. It's hard to see him now as he's breaking down so easily, and obviously because you get to a point that's going to happen, and so instead of marveling at the matches, you're concerned kind of watch him go through this, and it doesn't have the same impact for me. Now maybe to the casual fan it's not an issue, and I get that, but for me it's I prefer not to see it. But one match I really like, and maybe the match that steals the show, is the U.S. title story. Great feud. They've been building this forever. Jericho versus Owens. I don't think the U.S. title's ever meant so much on a WrestleMania show. I think they've done a fantastic job building that. And to see that get one of the top billings for WrestleMania is pretty shocking. But Jericho and Owens have done a great job with that one.
I agree. That's one. I mean, this has been a card that they largely had in place by November. And you're seeing... I think in the case of that particular program, that they knew where their destination was, mm-hmm. and just logical booking backwards for that particular one. Just one last thing on the Reigns and Undertaker one. Certainly, I mean, to me, it's a tough argument to make going with the Undertaker winning this match at WrestleMania when so much is geared towards Roman Reigns. And if, in fact, you finally execute this turn, I think there's no question that Roman Reigns should win this match. Do you think any differently?
Well, they've been very careful with Undertaker since that big loss.
Yep.
But if they were going to cash in again, I'm pretty sure they'd do it with Roman Reigns, just using their logic against them. I think that's probably what they would do. I think it really cements Roman Reigns as a heel, even though that's not those aren't the designs as of right now, but... that's one that's going to be weird to see how it plays out, because the crowd reactions would be pretty negative towards Roman Reigns. And I just think he benefits so much from a heel run. He just has so – I think he probably would like a heel run. And I think it'd be for him just a great opportunity to kind of spread his wings creatively and in terms of in-ring work and do stuff he hasn't been able to do. And
it lays the foundation for a more organic babyface run down the road. That, I mean, there's no rush with this guy that you could not eventually get to that 2 years from now.
Well, it's the Rocky Maivia thing. Die, Rocky, die. It's that kind of reaction you're getting from the audience after you did the squeaky, clean babyface push for him in 96. It was rejected. And by 97, they knew they had to do something. And they made an adjustment. And then he was able to make his adjustment, evolve from Rocky Maivia to The Rock, and just gave him some freedom to do it. It remains to be seen if they'll do that with Roman Reigns, but I think they should have done it long ago. But Vince is a stubborn guy, and you can have everyone in the company line up one after one and give him their heartfelt pitch for turning Roman Reigns. Sometimes Vince will just double down because you're telling me he can't do something or it's not the right idea. He will get stubborn about it. And so that also could be at play here. But another match that I think we can't overlook is the WWE Cruiserweight Championship match. Neville's the champion against Austin Aries, who's coming back, and he's really shined every opportunity he's had on their TVs. He's really run with the ball and has done a fantastic job. So that match could steal them. It depends on time. It's all a matter of time. If they get enough time, those guys can tell a great story in their match and knock it out of the park. They really could.
For them personally, like, I don't know. I mean, since the network was introduced, you don't really have that formula where the payoffs were based on it was very significant if you were on the pay-per-view or you were on Sunday Night Heat and didn't get anything. Today it's much different for them. If financially it means very little, I think it would be to their benefit to be on the pre-show, because I would see them having the ability to have the match they want with the time they need on the pre-show, as opposed to that main show, which you look at it 4 hours, which you know personally, Court, that gets filled up real quick when you're including all of these matches, all of these entrants, New Day segments. If you have the legends out, you got to do the Hall of Fame rollout. I mean, that 4 hours gets packed in, and I would see Neville and Aries would probably be certainly on the receiving end of time being cut on the main show.
Yeah, it's a distinct possibility that match could see some time shaved off. Same with the triple threat for the tag team titles with Sheamus, Cesaro, Big Cass, Enzo, and the Club. That match probably is going to be a quickie. The Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal is probably going to be a quickie.
And what a lineup we've got going.
Yeah,
for this Battle Royal.
It's an eclectic mix. You got Big Show, Mojo Rawley, Apollo Crews, and so on and so forth. It's the annual thing they do, and they were onto something by making it that fast track for a guy on the flip side of Mania to go somewhere, but then they kind of stalled out with that idea. But it could have been a cool moment, like Money in the Bank was on WrestleMania Once Upon a Time. When someone gets that briefcase, you know that they're going to be factored in a big way on the flip side of WrestleMania. Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal could have been that for Cesaro, could have been it for other people, but it turned out.
You established it to me. You know, the first year is when you make that statement that mm-hmm. this is something that has consequences to it. This is something impactful. And they immediately have branded this. This is the way to get everyone on the show, and that's how it's viewed.
And my question to you is, what's your take on the Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt feud for the WWE Championship as we wrap up our WrestleMania look? That angle with the house burning down.
I didn't hate the house burning down, and I thought I would a lot more. I think that over the last couple of years, I think that the audience is a bit more conditioned now for these wacky angles that were largely reserved for Kane all these years. But between Lucha Underground, between the Hardys, I think that people were willing to go into this, the house burning, and at least understand you're getting to this match. Now, the problems here were the fact that Randy Orton was such a heel in this entire thing, on top of the fact that we do this angle this week where AJ Styles is fired for attacking another individual. And then the very next segment, we've got Baron Corbin, who tried to murder a man with a forklift. And then our babyface Randy Orton, the arsonist, who is headlining WrestleMania. And this is part of AJ's promo. He's completely justified in this outrage. This past week, the baptism thing, I felt that it was too much for me. I was kind of checked out with this baptism and where they've gone with this. Because, I mean, first of all, if I want to really nitpick, this guy was inside the goddamn compound that was supposedly burnt down.
Don't get Randy hot Orton's about it, Jesus.
He's not even – well, Randy Orton literally got hot about it and couldn't even burn this house down. He's a very ineffective arsonist.
It's funny because I remember talking to my son about it, and I said, you know, what do you think of that?
This is an awesome conversation. Why wasn't that on the podcast?
Oh, well, his logic was simple. Randy Orton,
let's talk about the arson angle.
Well, he saw this. He saw like a highlight, right? And he's like, what the heck was Randy Orton doing that for? He's a bad guy? And I was like, well, yeah, kind of. Basically, I mean, in the simplest, purest form, I mean, it seems like a heelish move. And so for the younger demographic watching, they interpret this as the younger demographic also thinks Bray Wyatt's really cool, the same way like Freddy Krueger was for my generation growing up, as I date myself here. they see Bray Wyatt as, you know, the entrance is cool, it's creepy, he's just an interesting character that pops out at you on screen. But when you see Randy Orton so arrogant and, you know, posing, that the pose was something, or it was interesting. At the end of
what angle, else do you do as you're watching a compound burn down? I mean, you can't just stand there with your shrug your shoulders. I mean, you've got to marvel at your masterpiece. To me, one of the biggest issues is the fact that they've never made it clear this relationship of Bray Wyatt and Sister Abigail. And I know this sounds silly, but we had the one line from Randy stating that the last words that Bray ever heard was her screams. So are we led to believe that Bray murdered this woman, or is this like his dead sister that Randy's just an asshole for burning her remains down? I mean, there's no sympathy for Randy Orton in this sense.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he was going for some sort of WWE bonfire theme for what he was doing out there. It was bizarre.
This was Camp WWE.
Yeah, yeah, it's what they should have done with the tapes with from Camp WWE. But yeah, it was an odd build, to say the very least, for that one. But I think they'll have a good match, and I would like to see Bray retain. I don't feel Orton right now has that juice behind him, and it's such a weird build for a babyface chasing the title. There's no fan energy behind it. There's no momentum behind it. It feels very flat. It feels like a good win for your new champion at a WrestleMania, which would be big for Bray Wyatt to seal the deal as a top star, as your champion, and have guys chase him for a while. I'd have him keep the belt for the foreseeable future, and then we shake things up with the draft, or you bring in new talent from Orlando. Okay, then let's evaluate. But for now, I think he's the right guy to have the belt.
I do too. I think he got over so much more than I assumed he would when he won that title at Elimination Chamber and then coming out of that show. I mean, for the first time to me, he's felt like a really significant presence on the main roster. I mean, you'd have to go right back to his debut when he kind of had that aura, which to me kind of fizzled within the first few months, but seems to have had that bag. And I think long term, you can eventually get a babyface run out of this guy as well. They went with it last year, right as he got injured, and they took to him immediately. Mm-hmm. So I think this has certainly revitalized Bray Wyatt. I feel the tease for these months was good for Randy Orton as well. So hopefully they can have a strong match. They, to me, would not be a wise option to put late in the show. I think they should be like right in the middle.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with back-to-back as well. And looking, you know, we talked a little bit about the Universal title match. Should this be the swan song for Bill Goldberg in the company? His last match, his last hurrah in WWE.
If I was Bill Goldberg, I would be extremely happy with this run. It was way more than he could have envisioned it was going to be when it was supposed to be one and done at Survivor Series. And to me, I'd be really happy to walk away from this afterwards. I can't imagine, given how over this guy got in immediate fashion, that the WWE would want to cease ties with him and not keep that relationship going for a match down the road, whether it's SummerSlam or later. I think he does have to disappear after WrestleMania. I just can't see the WWE not making an aggressive effort to retain him.
Yeah, and the problem with the nostalgia is it has a shelf life. And I think Bill is almost past the expiration date on his shelf life for a run, and you gotta lay off and bring him back in shorter little spurts. I think it would have been better to do the fall through Rumble than the fall through WrestleMania. It just seemed, for nostalgia purposes, a little long in the tooth. Like with it happens every time with Hulk Hogan, you bring him back when he used to wrestle. He gets a huge pop. People love it. They love the nostalgia, merch moves. And then you see a real quick drop off. And it always has a shelf life. Everyone loves it, feels good, but it just doesn't hold up in the long run. So I think that you can put him in there. You can put him in there when you need him. And God knows with the roster when you're going to need a guy like that to come back out and do something. So I'm curious to see how they do the finish for Brock Goldberg. And when he comes back, I'd like to see him go in a clean, clear, different direction than go back after Brock. So that'll be something to watch on the flip side of Mania. And the other thing that's interesting to me on the flip side of Mania is what will they do when inevitably Mick Foley does not return because he's going to have hip surgery. What do they do to replace that person in that dynamic with Steph on Monday Night Raw? And my first thought was, could Kurt Angle step in and replace Mick in that role?
Yeah, I could certainly see that being the way to reintroduce Kurt in a role with someone that, I mean, he played off of tremendously well back in 2000. I mean, that was that to me was the dynamic that really got Kurt Angle's personality out, was working off of Stephanie and to a lesser extent Edge and Christian. So I think those two have a natural dynamic together. There's the history between them that Kurt would be an easy way to reintroduce to fulfill that void that Mick Foley is going to have to present once he eventually is gone. And I think that that's just a matter of, it could be as early as this Monday that they just write him off.
Yeah, and it's probably they should probably do it by this Monday or at the latest, the go-home show. And then what's your prediction for the WWE Network subscription number for WrestleMania season? Do you think it's going to be flat, on par with last year, or a little higher, a little lower?
Well, right after the Rumble, they were at 1.5 million. I'm going to say that come WrestleMania Day, they will be at... or the day after, I guess, is when they will release the number. I think they're going to get an uptick from that number. I could see 1.6. I don't know if it's going to be significantly above that.
Yeah,
1.65.
Yeah, that's where I thought. That's where I thought as well. So I don't really have much to add. But yeah, I think it'd be something like that.
The key is how many of these people who latch on with the free subscriptions. How many of them are sticking around come May? That'll be the ultimate test, because last year it was, you know, this free gimmick was not a very successful one, and yet they're going back to the well with this again. And I'm just not a fan of just promoting the fact that your biggest shows of the year, it's free. It's like we're telling you, we're not attaching a value to it. And I think that long term people, I don't know, I'm just not a fan of it.
And I'm also wondering, at what point do they actually put out there and tease next year's WrestleMania main event? Vince has done that once before with Rock. And I'm wondering what they do as they enter the final year of their contract with Brock Lesnar, culminating with what we understand is possibly another showdown with Roman Reigns in New Orleans at WrestleMania 34.
I can't imagine them doing the same Rock Cena thing again, especially if that's your title program and you're telegraphing a 1 year run with Lesnar. I mean, you don't have to stick to that. But this next year is going to be interesting, because the last time we had Brock in his contract year, we were going right down to the wire of this guy who is going in as champion at WrestleMania. And is this guy going to be sticking around? And it wasn't until WrestleMania week that he announced that he was going to re-sign with the WWE at the time. And I guarantee the UFC talks are going to heat up again. I mean, he may have announced his retirement. He's out of the USADA testing pool, but he's going to be 40 next year, which is, you know, it's older for a fighter, but especially at heavyweight, it doesn't disqualify you from being able to fight.
It's crazy to think that Brock Lesnar is going to be 40 next year, when I remember Jim Ross, Jerry Briscoe recruiting him and reading about in the Observer newsletter in 1999, 2000, with WCW bidding as well on his services, as he was a big shot in the NCAA. So it's crazy to see how quickly time flies. But it'll be.
Do you realize he would have been the Tank Abbott guy with three count? That would have been Brock Lesnar in WCW.
And think about him in the Power Plant. How would that have turned out?
Oh, my God. I feel him and Buddy Lee Parker would have had quite a bond, actually.
We might have seen Goldberg versus Lesnar in 2000, and it would have been a one-off job match. You just never know, because WCW was pretty weird in 2000. But I'm very curious to see what the heel babyface dynamic is for this one, if they end up doing it, as is the plan right now for WrestleMania 34. And do they re-up with Brock? That's another question. They'll have a new TV deal looming. They'll need some star power. Need those subscribers coming back, like you mentioned. I love the Brock matches. He adds a unique component, an X factor, to what he brings to the table. But are they getting a real return on this investment? I don't know.
Well, I think that the formula for Brock that we've watched for the last 5 years now, which is crazy to think that's how long it's been since he came back, I do think over the next year it's going to somewhat evolve. I mean, he's doing more dates than ever now, and I feel as good as the promos are, it's just, to me, he's going to have to work on television at some point over this next year. And you build it to be something of importance, something big, not just a throwaway. You announce at the top of the hour he's going to be wrestling tonight. But I feel that there's – it seems that Brock is going to be more present than ever over this final year, especially if the title is on him. I think he'll be on all the pay-per-views, and you see his house show dates. I think that you do have to come up with some more creative ways, not make him – you don't want to just make him just another guy on the roster, but I do think you have to come up with more ways than just the weekly promo.
Yeah, and the promo and how they deliver their message has become very tired. And that's not a knock on the great talent of Paul Heyman or Brock Lesnar keeping warmed up in the ring during this. It's just it feels like they've gotten lazy with their creative for these talents. And that's something they really need to challenge themselves to do something with, because it's gotten very played out at this point. That's a big question mark. And another question mark is about Mauro Ranallo. Speculation over Mauro Ranallo's future. He's gone radio silent on Twitter since late night Monday. It was really technically around midnight, 12:30 a.m. Tuesday morning. But of course, he wasn't at SmackDown on Tuesday. What's your take?
I mean, with Mauro, I reached out to people around him, and all I've been told is that he's doing okay. It was noted by Dave Meltzer earlier this week that it was not the weather that was the reason he was not there. But I don't know, honestly, what the reason was that he wasn't there. Mm-hmm. I mean, we expect that he should be back next Tuesday, and if he's not, that would certainly be of concern. But that's about all. I did reach out and was just told that he is doing okay, because obviously Mauro, he's been very vocal about his issues with the bipolar disorder. And I think a lot of people simply they're concerned for him. So myself included. So that's kind of all I've been told at this point, is that he is okay.
Yeah, good. He's such a talented guy, and when you have something like what he has, you run so hot and hard, and it's kind of the fuel that makes you a genius, but also can challenge you at times. So, I'm glad to hear he's doing okay. It was nice to see a two-man broadcast booth, but it's even better when Mauro is there. I really do like Mauro a lot, and so hopefully everything turns out, because I mean he's just doing so much, from the boxing to MMA to WWE, it's just end a podcast. It's just like nonstop, and he loves that kind of schedule. It's a demanding schedule, and he's going all over the country, based out of LA. So he's nonstop.
One other thing is that there is a filmmaker out there that has done this documentary on Mauro, and I don't know when it's going to be released, but I got to see a screener of it a number of months ago, and I mean, it's unbelievable to watch if you've never seen kind of the issues that Mauro goes through and the travel stuff. I mean, it's one thing to hear about someone that is very open about their issues they deal with. It's quite another to actually see it. So when this documentary comes out, I certainly encourage people to check it out. I mean, I worked with Mauro for years here at the Fight Network. I was his producer on his radio show, so I know Mauro pretty well, and I think that this documentary, it kind of will give you a glimpse into this person much more than just the broadcaster.
Right, and I've worked with him as well, and he's a great guy. He really is a great guy, and there are announcers, there's broadcasters, there's people in talent. They're just talent that just – they don't care, Mauro cares. He cares a lot, and sometimes on social media, people knock him for – how he sometimes delivers or calls a match. I'm like, you don't understand. The guy has so much passion. The guy takes this very seriously. This is everything to him. So, I'm glad to hear he's doing okay. And hopefully he continues to be all over my TV screen, whether I'm watching boxing, wrestling, MMA, whatever it is, because he's a very talented guy. It'll be interesting just because you're in that crunch period with WrestleMania too, to see what happens in the next few weeks. You know, from the office end, it's like it's always quote unquote all hands on deck right now. So we'll see. You know, it's also interesting thinking about what's going on in Orlando. WWE Performance Center had some interesting talent out there this week. You had Wes Briscoe, some talent from Norway, a former Olympian, and one of the top stars from Stardom out in Japan, Io Shirai. I'm probably butchering her name. Sorry, guys. But a lot of great talent out there, some for tryouts, some for just a week camp or to work with the talent there, in the case, I understand, of the Stardom girl, Shirai. So what's the latest and greatest on that?
Yeah, I think that this is definitely, in particular, Shirai and Kairi Hojo being, Shirai apparently is not signed yet, but it's, you know, someone that they've been recruiting for a while. I think that instantly adds a ton of intrigue into that women's division on NXT. And realistically, those women should be on the main roster really quickly, but we know how that goes. I think overall, though, it's just NXT is very much in this transitional period at the moment. You don't sense the same buzz of a year ago that this company had, or this, I guess, sub-promotion of the WWE. I mean, you compare this to last year, Court, where TakeOver, all the interest was around Shinsuke Nakamura coming in with Sami Zayn. You had Bayley's feud with Asuka. And, I mean, that's kind of the catch-22 of this, of NXT, is that you're getting these people ready for the main roster, and you combine WrestleMania call-ups from a year ago with the draft, and you can't necessarily replenish a talent that's over with talent that's not, and just expect it overnight to occur. And that's what I kind of feel at the moment with NXT. But you look at, you know, 6 months from now, they could have quite the influx of talent that becomes available, and along with talent that you're seeing joining at the moment.
Yeah, and NXT has to serve its purpose. And you can say that the action and the buzz aren't what it once was, but it really has to be sometimes a less sexy venture, because it's developing the talent for the main roster. And some of that isn't sexy. Some of that is giving these guys TV time and fine-tuning them, making adjustments, polishing them up. And that's not necessarily going to translate to great TV or buzzworthy stuff, because the nuts and bolts of a developmental is to be this embryonic type environment where they can develop into something more complete for the main roster. When you bring in big attractions, the top guy from Japan, and you have Sami Zayn, who was, you know, a big guy to do that match with last year. Yeah, I mean, it's not the same as developing and grooming young talent, and that takes a lot of time, and the TV usually during that period is not going to be the hottest TV, because it's the guys are just finding their mojo. So I think that also plays into it, and I think that's not necessarily a bad thing. They also got hit with some injury bugs. You know, if you look at the Australians, they got nailed with the injury bug, and so there's a few guys out. So, you know, it's a few things that are happening right now. The TV could use a little bit of a spark, I agree, but they're in a transitional period, and I think it's important for them to really focus on young talent. Nakamura, who we all know will probably be on the roster very soon, the main roster, is 37, has done MMA, has done the hard, grueling style for New Japan. He's an old 37. It's almost like dog years for him. So you want to get him up now. And you can tell that based on the lack of promotional representation for the UK tour with Nakamura, he's probably going to be up before June. So is it going to be the day after WrestleMania or in May? We don't know, but we'll see. Another interesting development is what's going on across town in Orlando with all the changes to Impact Wrestling. No longer TNA. Last time we did the show, Dixie Carter was there, and it was called TNA. Not so much. What's your takeaway as they enter they're going to be entering the third week soon of the new regime and the new era for Anthem's Impact Wrestling?
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of last week's show. I thought that the overall tone was just too much of this company's been run into the ground. And I'm never a fan of going out there and you bury your own product to what is your most loyal audience. And you look at how the WWE positions NXT now in comparison to FCW. And they do that comparison where it's FCW was just, it was a dump essentially is what they tell you. The difference is they have something bigger and better that has since replaced it. And you do have your audience that has gravitated towards it in NXT. In the case of Impact last week, that was night one. And it's the latest, hey, we promise we're going to get things on track at this point. And this audience, I mean, they've been through those promises quite a lot. If you've been following this product for 15 years, you've gone through all of these regime changes and they've happened over and over and over again. And here we are. I feel that at least last week's show, it certainly felt like it was one that it was newsworthy. It definitely had momentum attached to it, but overall it didn't attract a higher audience. It seems like this is going to be an extremely long road for this company to go down and try and regain this fan base. And what is the ceiling on Pop TV? I mean, their high mark was 410,000 viewers for the final deletion. So we know they can hit that figure. Is that a number on U.S. television that is going to be enough to facilitate house shows and do pay-per-views? It's very difficult. It's such a different environment in the U.S. wrestling scene than it was even 5 years ago when you're talking about available talent and all of the different options that TNA had when the WWE wasn't in this game, where TNA had their pick of the litter when it came to their budget and talent that they could go out and get that was not, quote unquote, WWE ready or WWE had no interest in. Now they do have interest in all of those talents.
Yeah, and it's hard for me to judge at this point. I want to give them another cycle of TVs, meaning the next TV taping they do soon.
Did you see last night's show?
I saw about half of it, and
yeah.
I felt that the LAX vignettes, very cinematic. I really like it. They have they've actually upgraded their talent in-house but their production end when it comes to doing these vignettes. And Jeremy Borash and the new production crew he's working with do a phenomenal job. I mean, they really do. It feels cinematic, but doesn't feel hokey and ridiculous like something out of a Batman's 1960s vignette or cartoon. It feels just a little more stylized, and I thought that the LAX vignettes were very effective. The other ones I've seen they did, even for – it was like a Suicide Squad kind of teaser trailer for Suicide. In Suicide, the character is so goofy, but they actually made it stylized, and it looked really good for what it was. So I want to give them time. I want to give them time to get – find their groove. They have a whole new regime in, and yes, they've all worked together, but different environment – different circumstances, different ownership, different talent, different challenges, different network. It give them time to kind of find their groove or not. And I think usually you can tell like 6 to 8 weeks. First of all, does the show demonstrate any growth in the ratings or viewership? And creatively, are they going in the right direction or is this history repeating itself? Which, you know, I mentioned the weird WCW 2000 era, and I remember vividly Vince Russo, Eric Bischoff doing that hard reset where they stripped all the titles from all the guys and they were just blowing up everything and starting over. New day on the first day on the job. And it was a pretty buzzy show, but it also had serious ramifications in a negative sense in the long haul. So refreshes, reboots, resets can all be very buzzy and get people talking and engaged, but maybe not for the right reasons. So I'm in a wait-and-see mode on Impact, but I'm watching it probably now more than I have in a long time, so I guess that's something to be said about that.
I think that they were able to – I mean, on the surface, I mean, we're kind of in a bubble where you feel that TNA is being discussed more now and has people's interest, even though that wasn't reflected in the television number last week. But at least on this week's show, I mean, it was still – prevalent, the Jeremy Borash, Josh Matthews stuff, but I thought it was toned down, in particular when they were actually calling the matches, when you had Garza Jr. and Laredo Kid. I thought they benefited greatly from being on week two as opposed to the treatment Reno Scum got last week, where they felt like an afterthought because these warring announcers are going at it as the match is happening, which I think was a big turnoff to people. I will say, though, I think that there is a role, certainly, for Josh Matthews as a heel, just not on the announce desk.
Yeah, I just think that you have – and you can do some with him in the announced – at the announce desk. It's just – I think you just got to find the right level of intensity, and sometimes it can be blinding and counterproductive, and that's all it is. It's so hard, and I'm not going to condemn for the first week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Let them make their adjustments, and when they watch the show in its fully assembled, produced version, and they're watching, they're taking mental notes. I would presume I would. You kind of have to do a postmortem on each show and see, oh man, we whiffed on that. We didn't on that. We need to fine tune Josh here, because with a postmortem, you really get an honest look and appraisal of the product. And that's important, because they need to make adjustments. And from a creative point of view, when you're doing that volume of TV in such a concentrated period of time, it's you get lost very easily in that forest of creativity, because you're doing like a month plus of TV in one shot. It's not like the old days in the WWF and the syndicated era where you're doing an hour, which is really 42 minutes, and you're doing that, you know, for three sessions at a TV taping or something. You're doing a lot more here, because it's a two-hour show. There's a lot of pre-tapes, and then you got to do stylized stuff with guys like the LAX squad. So, and they're all new. You know, it's just all their first time out. So I'm not making excuses, but trying to give perspective on the good, the bad, and the ugly of Impact right now. And I almost said TNA. It's going to take a while for me to get used to Impact Wrestling, but I do like it more than the old TNA.
As well, you know, it's been discussed heavily. We went over it a lot on the Lost Sunday, but just everything with the Broken Hardys and sending the legal letter to the Hardys, the cable providers with Ring of Honor's pay-per-view last Friday. What do you think is the outcome here? I feel like it's probably pretty cut and dry with whatever the language is of the contract, which none of us have seen. And this could be a very open and shut case if this ends up going all the way to court.
There have been a lot of guys over the years that have fought for their names, and circumstances in before a judge and a court of law can really alter what we perceive to be a cut and dry situation. British Bulldog aggressively fought for his name, the moniker British Bulldog, and Ultimate Warrior Jim Hellwig did as well. Many guys have tested this in the legal system, and it's been sometimes fairly favorable, but it's also a financially draining process. And in the end, if you're going to make a quick move soon to WWE, this won't be resolved in time. It's going to take possibly a year, possibly 2 years, and so you're draining your savings on legal fees and all this testimony. And if you're on the road, it's harder to get through all that stuff when you're home. So it's almost like at a certain point, do you just move on, or do you double down, because you did create a large part of this, if not the whole thing outright? It's a tough challenge. I see both sides, and I see why the Hardys would fight for it, and I also see why they would say, fuck, I want to fight for it, but at the same time, it's just not realistic. It's disappointing to see this play out the way it did. I understand protecting an IP as a promoter, as someone that's been in WWE, and we've had to come up with fucking goofy names because we wanted to create an IP. I get wanting to own an intellectual property and all that stuff. But Impact should also want to be currying favor and look at in this new generation or this new era as in a favorable way, a real fan favorite company, a new era where they're just doing everything for the fans. And this one is a strategic move, and it's a PR move, and I would have advised them to probably maybe push back a little bit, but at the end, let them move on and use it, because everyone's going to be curious about where it all started. And they're going to look back, and Impact can counter-market that and say, hey, you want to see the origins of the Broken Saga? Here's where you can get it. Here's how you can access it. And they can monetize that. And here they're not – I don't think they're going to be able to do anything with it, because they're going to get shit on for it. and there's going to be a negativity attached to it. So it's not favorable for them. It's a lose-lose for them. It's a lose-lose for the Hardys. Sometimes that happens in wrestling, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated in some ways, because if they were to just wave that, listen, this is a company that sorely needs as much goodwill as possible from its audience. I completely agree with you there. However, if this happens 6 months from now where another talent goes to leave and you've set this precedent that you ignored this part of a contract, why can't I leave with my character now? And, you know, that's, you know, if WWE were to do this, no one would give it a second of thought. But this is a company that I feel the way it was done last week was where it wasn't so much that they exercised this, because they very much the contracts could back up exactly what they're claiming. But to do it on the day of the pay-per-view, and the fact that the Dish Network dropped the ROH pay-per-view, I think that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, that there was the way in which the timing worked out here, that it happened on that Friday afternoon last week.
It's bad form, and it was by design, because nothing happens that quickly legally. They knew what they were doing, how they were doing it. Yeah, it's unfortunate. It really is. And, you know, but to your point, sometimes there always is a double – not sometimes. There's always a double standard when it comes to wrestling and who you allow to do what in terms of your contract or creatively or taking time off or what you give them a piece of the action on. There's always going to be a double standard, and it'll always lean in favor of the big time stars that draw you money. Not necessarily every time, but it typically does. Talking a little bit about Ring of Honor, they just brought in the Hardys. They've been doing some fun stuff with the Bucks, but there's also a lot of talent departures and a lot of spin about that. Bobby Fish, Dalton Castle, Donovan Dijak, I'm butchering his name surely, Leo Rush, Kyle O'Reilly, and perhaps soon War Machine and Adam Cole. It reminds me almost of the last season of The Sopranos, where they just about killed everyone off before it ended. I'm like, who's going to be left? And that's a great question, because they now have to create new opportunities and new stars. That's good for the young guys, but they need to find some fresh blood, because the Hardys, it's a quick stop, it's a fun stop, but they're not going to be there for the long haul.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff Hardy did an interview this week just classifying it as a short-term deal. So, I mean, they have no dates beyond April 1st, and I think most people can read into that what you will. When you look at the talent that is left, it's like when you list it all, I mean, this is like with Michael Elgin, for instance. I mean, he has stated that, you know, if it's through New Japan, he's not opposed to still working with them. Mm-hmm. Bobby Fish, it's that he'll be open to outside dates now. So, I mean, you may still see these guys pop in here and there. Maybe not.
I think we have a better chance of Broken Joe Koff appearing on Ring of Honor, which I would love to see someone Photoshop right now.
That would be fantastic. Yeah, I mean, these are guys that you have to replace and keep things going. Do you think that the exclusive deals are something that are just going to be too difficult to maintain, or is that not even the issue here?
I just don't think – I would be – listen, Ring of Honor might be able to give them a great deal. They might still turn it down sometimes. There's lots of opportunity. This is probably the best free agent market there's been since the post-ECW-WCW downfall in 2001, where it was just flooded with talent, top money-drawing talent, but also young guys breaking out like AJ Styles, low-key, the Hit Squad, and all those guys that were big in 2001, 2002, Chris Daniels, guys like that. This is huge. So, I mean, these guys, there's so many places to work, from the UK to Japan to Mexico, with the Crash blowing up as a border town promotion that's now doing things. There's just a lot of great promotions at the indie level. Cody Rhodes is a great example of that, as a guy that's really doing quite well, making towns all over the place, and kind of in control of his fate and not having to have a contract that blocks him out, and maybe creatively he feels unsatisfied. And that's – there's a lot to be said about having that freedom. And right now, a lot of this talent – they're all very talented guys that I think can contribute to many companies, or just one down in Orlando or Stanford, and do rather well. And I think, you know, if you look at Adam Cole, he's 27. it's time. It's time. It really is. War Machine, I can see them being really appealing to both New Japan, who's going to roll out a U.S. expansion soon, as well as the New Japan over in Japan. So and I can see Dalton Castle also fit in that role. And I think Leo Rush, I mean, he can go anywhere and he's going to be awesome. Kyle O'Reilly, same. I mean, great talent, and they know their value. And so I think there's a lot to be said about that. I just hope really this leads to Broken Joe Koff merch. I just can't get that out of my head now. Sorry.
Wow, you've really planted that seed out there.
Oh,
so
Jesus.
We'll see if it is ever realized on television. before we wrap things up here, let's quickly give people an update here on the New Japan Cup, because the semifinals are set and they're happening this Sunday. On one side of the bracket, we have Evil taking on Bad Luck Fale, and then following today's result, where Tomohiro Ishii defeated Sanada, it will now be Ishii and Katsuyori Shibata, which should be nuts on Sunday. And then the two winners face on Monday, and then the winner will get a title match of their choosing on April the 9th, next month. And finally, Court.
Yes.
Floyd Mayweather Jr. and Conor McGregor. Dana White has now stated that he thinks this fight will ultimately happen, which is quite the change of public opinion of one Dana White. He has clearly flipped on this. And, I mean, is this now a question of when and not if?
He basically is he's put McGregor in a weird position, because he's saying, okay, it's going to happen. Now is McGregor going to go all in on this? Because it's boxing rules, and there's no compromise.
Just by the way, if what you're saying is that Conor was using this as a leverage play to get a better UFC deal for his next fight and never wanted to go ahead with this, that's a hell of a fucking power play move for Dana White to then just go public and say, all right, you can have it.
That's exactly what I'm saying, is all right, go for it. Because
so for the amount of money that guy will make in that fight, I don't know if it's necessarily that much of a punishment to end up getting this fight, because he will make more money in this fight. And that's another interesting thing, is the fact that if this fight were to happen and Conor McGregor walks away making the amount he stands to make in that fight, even as the B-side in this equation, I mean, how is your mentality coming back to the UFC and fighting for what is incredible money by UFC standards, but now you've been to the promised land of prize fighting paydays and then taking a step back when you go to fight a Tony Ferguson or a Khabib Nurmagomedov?
Wow, you just rattled that one off. I can't even say a normal name. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely it's interesting to see what happens here, because it's been a game of chess. I think McGregor's taken a bad deal, though, on this. I really do. Yeah, the payoff is great, yes, but he's still really putting himself in a bad spot, because it's not like a Nokia Ali. You know, there's no flexing on these rules. It's going to be a classic boxing fight, and it'll do big money. I'll watch it. I never watch boxing anymore. I'll watch it, sure.
Oh, it's going to do gigantic business. I mean, there's no question about that, but I also think there's no question as to the outcome of this fight either.
Right, and so it's like, all it's
– You're buying the sizzle, the spectacle, and the promotion, which will be fantastic for this fight, but – I mean, I think you really have to be going out on a limb to try and convince yourself of anything other than an extremely dominant victory by Floyd Mayweather Jr.
Extremely. I mean,
yes.
There's no two ways around this one. It's going to be a smash fight. I mean, it is just going to go one way, and it's going to be – I don't think it's going to go very long, even for a Floyd fight, which they always do. I just can see this fight – he doesn't have to do much to put down McGregor, and I just don't see McGregor having much of a shot. But it's going to be a weird thing, because if Conor loses again, and this is not something you can really – how are you going to rematch it? Is the rematch – if there's a rematch that happens in the cage? Okay, that's interesting. That might sell me on it. Otherwise
– oh, they'll do Mania in New Orleans next year. It's going to lease out Conor McGregor. He's like the new Andre the Giant. UFC is going to be Vince McMahon Sr. It's going to lend out their big draw, have him go work all the boxing territory, the pro wrestling circuit,
send him
to Japan for the G1.
I heard actually it was a Grapple Kingdom 2 fight in New Orleans that you
keep that under wraps.
Yeah, Law and MLW are working on the big
Wade
money
versus Conor McGregor. That would be fantastic.
Oh, I see it. I see it happening.
Look how you guys made that referee's career. It was all uphill after that.
That referee, Samoa Joe, yes. He will never acknowledge that he ever did that.
You kidding? When they put out the Samoa Joe 24 episode, I mean, that's going to be the opening scene. Oh. That'll be the – look how far I had fallen.
I was officiating.
What was your lowest point? Well, there was a WrestleMania Grapple Kingdom event, and I didn't even take my I couldn't understand where I was and what I was doing.
He had his backpack on. Just you never know. I thought it was like Pride style. He had cameras coming out of it. Maybe he's a pro. But yeah, that was probably something he would hope not to participate.
Two listeners are all searching Grapple Kingdom right now.
Oh,
waiting Court Bauer. Court's finest moment.
Oh yes. Hey, we all have a job in life, and sometimes it's to do the job.
Oh boy. All right, everyone. That's going to bring an end to the show, but the reason that we came together, it was to promote stuff, because WrestleMania weekend, there are two major events happening. The first is Thursday night.
It is. Was that a toss to me?
Yeah, that was me just handing the ball to you to promote your event is it sold out yet?
The platinum tickets sold out in 2 hours. Then we just added this week a few more golden tickets for the meet and greet with New Japan talent, including Ricochet, Will Ospreay, and the Bullet Club's Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa. And we'll also have a live panel for live MLW radio podcast, and that's just a GA ticket to get into that. That's $15. And Dave Meltzer is on the panel. I'll be on the panel. MVP will be on the panel. All the New Japan guys in for that will be on the panel, along with some surprises. Who's who was going to show up, like it is every year at Wally Mania. And there'll be a fan Q&A. Jim Ross will be there. And then afterwards, Wale will perform. And then following that, it's a crazy after party. It goes into the wee hours of the morning. And last year, Enzo Amore ended up popping up and rapping on stage with Wale, which was crazy. And Jericho got wild in the green room. So it's a fun time. It is wrestling's equivalent to the Star Wars Mos Eisley Cantina, where everyone from the wrestling universe congregates and hangs out, and it's a very weird night, but a lot of fun. Hopefully no one loses an arm like in Star Wars, but crazier things have happened. You never know. I mean, maybe Tonga's dad, Haku, will show up and take someone's eye.
Well, if you're going to Wale Mania, Friday's probably a write-off for you. And then Saturday, you can go and enjoy some of the other events going on in the city, because the main event, everyone knows, WrestleMania weekend, it's all about Sunday. And that is the Live Review Away podcast, which is happening Sunday morning, 11 a.m., at the Barley and Vine Beer Garden, which is at 2406 East Washington Street. It's about 8 minutes from the Amway Center, which is housing NXT, the Hall of Fame, and Raw the next night. So a very close trek to make if you are in the downtown Orlando area. 11 a.m., we'll be doing a meet and greet, and then we'll do a one-hour podcast. We'll get everyone out of there in time, because you probably have many things you're planning to do on WrestleMania Sunday. And if you want more details and confirming your attendance, you can go to facebook.com/liveaudiowrestling. It's going to be a lot of fun, Court.
I should also mention that you can get tickets for our thing.
Muted your mic, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I had a coughing fit.
Boy.
I'm trying to be a pro here. You got to call out what we're doing behind
the
scenes.
Fair enough.
You can also get tickets to Wally Mania at MLW.com. A few golden tickets left, not many. And then, again, the GA is $15. That gets you in for the whole night except for the meet and greet. It's a really good time. You'll have a lot of fun. MLW.com.
Awesome stuff. We'll have to do this again sometime, Court. I miss your voice.
Aw.